Thanks very much, Jim, for that welcome. The concept for this event has evolved out of a magazine that I launched in China in the run-up to the Beijing Olympics, and it's built around a couple of key insights. Firstly, the city's approach hosting a wider range of events as part of a unified and linked-up strategy. Different types of events fulfill specific purposes. And as cities are increasingly competing with other cities, whether that for talent, tourism, capital, investment and trade. And secondly, we believe that multiple types of event owners can learn from each other, fostering innovation. Thirdly, we will never lose sight of the need for our paying sponsors and delegates to get a real return on attending an event like this. And we are extremely focused on making this valuable for you. This sounds like quite a Dutch approach, which is a perfect moment for me to introduce my good friend, Koos Tesler, the chairman of Cavendish Group, to welcome you.
Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Cavendish Group is a business media company. We are international publishers, and we also organize innovative and substantial international events. Events that we believe must be important and must have business purpose. These events include the International Capital Conference, ICC, which we successfully held 2 weeks ago in Beijing, and which is the Davos level China-EU Business Forum. And it includes RATE. RATE standing for Robotics, Artificial Intelligence, Internet of Things, and Data. RATE is Europe's largest event for disruptive innovation, which will take place May 31st and June 1st next year in Utrecht, the Netherlands, the center of Europe. We will welcome more than 1,000 companies at the RATE Convex, mainly from large and established sectors such as finance, energy, automotive, and pharma. My personal involvement with Cavendish very much intersects with the event world of host city. I was investor and CEO of De Boer, the temporary overlay company, and through our successful cooperation with the Host City magazine and the Cavendish China team, we won a substantial contract in the Beijing Olympics, for which I worked together with the Cavendish team and with Matthew, and I eventually became chairman and shareholder of Cavendish Group. I would like to address warm thanks to the people in Glasgow. We have had excellent support from everybody in Glasgow for this event, especially from Scott Taylor and all the Glasgow Marketing Bureau, from Paul Bush and from Event Scotland, and from Bridget McConnell and Ian Hooper from Glasgow Life. We thank our excellent partner UKTI for their invaluable contribution. We thank, of course, all our sponsors and stand-up exhibitors, whom we depend on. Please, can we encourage everybody to visit and meet them so we can drive successful business alongside this conference. We look forward to listening to all of our excellent speakers and panels during this event. And we would like to encourage the speakers, as we are in the Netherlands, to be frank and direct. Thank you.
Thank you, Koos. We're waiting for Mike Lee, who is on the way. Yes, good. So in a few minutes, Mike Lee, who's a highly appreciated partner of Host City, chairman of Aero Communications, and the director of communications for the London 2012 bid, who many of you in the event world will know, will take over and moderate the first panel. But before this, I'd like to formally start the Host City conference this year by both thanking Sir Craig Reedy for his support of our event, which we've appreciated very much since we launched last year in London. And I would now like to invite Sir Craig, Vice President of the IOC, Chairman of the 2020 Evaluation Commission, Chairman of WADA, and Director of the London 2012 Organising Committee, to make the keynote opening address of this second Host City event.
Thank you, Matthew. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Welcome to Glasgow. I don't often get the opportunity to say this on occasions like this to an audience like this, but as a Glaswegian, for me, I promise you, it is a real pleasure. I had a date in my diary when Matthew asked me if I would speak at this conference, and that was a game of golf at 9:30 this morning at Ranfurly Castle Golf Club, which is on the south side of the city. So clearly, that proved that I was good at decisions and took the decision to come here. At that time, too, I didn't know that I would have to agree to the publication of an independent commission report by the World Anti-Doping Agency in Geneva this afternoon at 3 o'clock. So if I don't appear this afternoon, you will probably know the reason why. Now, the first host city conference concentrated on sports events, but this conference will be slightly different. It's hosted here in Glasgow, a new venue, and widens the agenda well beyond sport. Conferences themselves are big business, and the number is growing worldwide, with a wider range of cities gaining market share. Conferences and business tourism are complementary to the sports, leisure, and entertainment tourism, requiring much of the same infrastructure, airports, hotels, arenas, and so on. And I hope that over the next day and a half, we and you can examine a whole range of issues which will enthuse cities and rights holders of sporting, cultural, and business events, all of which can bring to the host city a range of economic benefits with a high yield from visitors and the potential to provide major promotional benefits. This city of Glasgow has a good record in business tourism. Since 2005, 1.2 million conference delegates have visited here, with value secured of around £1.2 billion. These figures, of course, from the Glasgow City Marketing Bureau. They also claim to my interest that one in five people pulling a suitcase in Glasgow today is a conference delegate. Now, how things change. When I first came to this city in 1959, I knew a policeman who could have told me what the other four were. And if they had a suitcase today, let's hope it is a waterproof suitcase. But I come from the world of sport, and I'd like to start you off with some remarks on a range of sports events. Last year at this conference, we were looking at mega events, and if the Olympic Games is the most mega of the mega events, there are changes in the Olympic world which are worthy of a mention. But I'd like to lead with some examples of more modest scale, which can deliver the aspirations of cities around the world. The recent sport call surveys rather support the view I expressed earlier, that the sports event market, as well as the conference market, is pretty buoyant. Over a period of 13 years, the statistics reveal, that's past and to come, the statistics reveal that 81 nations have hosted or will host a world championship or a multi-sport games. The list of nations includes all the big names that you would expect, but slightly to my surprise, it includes Bahamas, Algeria, Uganda, and Egypt. And when you look at the city as opposed to the nation experience, the numbers are roughly the same. Over the same period, this indicates that 636 cities have hosted or will host events in the same categories of world championships or multi-event games. And it's some of satisfaction to the IOC that London, Rio, Moscow, Tokyo, and Paris all feature to the top end of the list. But once again, can I use the Glasgow experience as a guide? After its own mega event in 2014 with the acclaimed Commonwealth Games, Glasgow has been able to maintain its place in the sporting sun, with two outstanding Davis Cup ties against, would you believe it, in succession, USA and Australia. Both won, I'm pleased to say. Both were promoted in the new Emirates Arena, built with considerable spectator appeal and essentially wall-to-wall television coverage. In terms of even greater international promotional benefits, we might just look at the recently concluded International Gymnastics Federation World Championships in the SSE Hydro, the 12,000-seat new arena, also completed in advance of 2014. Now, athletes do not, in my experience, spend much money at their events, and the 594 gymnasts, mostly very young, were unlikely to break the trend. But 2 weeks ago, over 19% of the almost 60,000 spectators came from outside the UK, and 49% of the tickets sold were purchased outside Scotland. The presentation of these championships in the arena was the best presentation of any indoor sport that I have ever seen. BBC coverage, live on network channels, was picked up by 87 countries, including Russia, United States, Japan, and China. The FIG were delighted. Team GB, who did rather well, were delighted. The Hydro management were delighted. UK Sport, Scottish Government, and the City of Glasgow, the three main outside funders, were all delighted. Not a bad result. But I only sound one note of caution. World-class presentation and organisation does not come cheap. And in a country like ours, Scotland and Britain, with a real tradition of spectator attendance and gate receipts, boy, do we buy tickets to watch sport. Even here, there is constant need for civic or national government support. And in my view, wise international sports federations will bear this in mind when seeking future host city venues. Now, if we can turn to the mega events and to try to do it on an incremental scale, the future looks reasonably sound. Commonwealth Games hosts are in place for 2018 and 2022. The Asian Games will go to Indonesia, and the Olympic Council of Asia has the protection of a list of Chinese cities with hosting ambitions. The Pan American Games were a great success in Toronto this year, ahead, I think, for Lima in 2019. The first European Games were a real success in Baku in Azerbaijan. An announcement of the next hosts in 2019 is imminent, probably heading again to a prosperous city in Eastern Europe. The Olympic movement took a fair bit of criticism over the list of cities, the diminishing list, bidding for the 2022 Olympic Winter Games. Four of the original candidate cities withdrew for a variety of political or economic reasons, leaving a choice between Beijing in China and Almaty in Kazakhstan. Both cities were encouraged to consider the implications for their candidature of the changes proposed by Agenda 2020, the IOC's strategic and comprehensive reform package, even though its acceptance by the IOC session took place only 8 months before the date of the final city choice. The changes adopted by both cities allowed for a reduction in costs of organising the Games, and these were all happily negotiated with the IOC before the final decision. The choice of Beijing was a narrow victory by 44 votes to 40, a result which resulted and brought considerable credit on the Kazakh city and its supporters. But the certainty offered by Beijing was reinforced within a few weeks by the decision of a very large devaluation of the Kazakhstan currency. Now, roughly the same agenda 2020 changes have applied to the organizing committee in Tokyo for the 2020 Summer Games, even though these games were awarded in Beijing, in Buenos Aires in 2003. Cost savings of around $2 billion have been achieved, but have involved a number of changes to venues previously approved by the international federations, the most significant being the plans for the proposed new national stadium. The first Olympic contest to be fully conducted under the new rules will be the recently underway contest to host the 2024 Olympic Summer Games, with five cities, Budapest, Hamburg, Los Angeles, Paris, and Rome. And you'll notice the IOC members at the moment always announce them in alphabetical order, meeting the starting deadline of the 15th of September. Olympic bidding processes have developed over the years from a one-stage process to a two-stage process with a cut between the applicant and candidates phases, and now to a three-stage process. The real innovation is what we choose to call the invitation phase. The aim of this phase, where there is no formal commitment to bid, is to provide an ongoing dialogue with targeted information tailored to meet the city's specific needs and to help cities and their national Olympic committees and potential games stakeholders to better understand games needs and how these can be aligned with their own specific context and long-term development plans. Cities are assisted to better shape their value propositions, discussing proposals and potential solutions that deliver excellent games without compromising the field of play for the athletes, while also meeting the needs of the city and the region to ensure the games leave a positive, long-term and sustainable legacy. Once the bid is initiated, and five have, the race is underway, three stages commence, covering the first is vision, games concept and strategy, which commenced on the 1st of September, on 15th of September 2015, and will run until June 2016. Then the second phase, governance, legal and venue funding, from June 2016 to December 2016. Then games delivery, experience and venue legacy, from December 2016 through to decision day in September 2017. Cities will make three submissions at the end of each phase, and the IOC Executive Board will confirm the transition to the next phase. There will be constant dialogue with the IOC and steps taken to reduce the cost of the bidding process. Certainly, this new system has the approval, to date, of the five candidate cities, and it will be interesting to see how the process develops. The previous system of movement from applicant to candidate city status and the rigorous detailed templates provided by the IOC was the gold standard in city selection processes. But as the Olympic city market showed some weakness, there can be little wrong in conducting a full and intelligent in-house review with five excellent cities in the race for 2024. So Agenda 2020 can claim, I think, so far, that it has worked. It does occur to me, however, that we have just watched, in England, something of a halfway house in the range of mega events. The Rugby World Cup was certainly a mega event, with a large percentage of the matches, particularly in the later stages, played in London or Cardiff in the two famous rugby stadiums, excuse me, which hold very large spectator accommodation. What seemed to me to be different on this occasion was the skillful range of successes at a list of cities in several English regions. The development of the fan zone concept and the excitement developed by excellent television and media comment seemed to make all the earlier pool matches a great success. The event was also helped by the major contribution made by the dominant sport in these islands, the sport of football. And famous and sophisticated football stadiums seemed happily to adapt and to welcome the sport of rugby. And for four of the 6 weeks of the event, Birmingham, Milton Keynes, Manchester, Brighton, Gloucester, Leeds, Newcastle, Leicester and Exeter all became host cities. So, sport has a multitude of experience and its events demand cooperation between the rights holders, the host cities, the sponsors, the media partners and a whole list of suppliers and organising presenters. I hope that this short introduction has set the scene as we begin to develop the many themes in hosting events that could interest everyone in this room. We hope that this will enhance a considerable store of knowledge which is in this room, and to come and to encourage more and more cities to become host cities. So enjoy your day and a half, and with a bit of luck by lunchtime, the sun will be shining from a clear blue sky. And if you believe that, and if it happens, believe me, you heard it from me first. Thank you very much.